In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 245. Of the Ministry of Arts podcast. As ever, thank you to our Patreon supporters, without whom we could not produce this podcast. And if you like what you hear and you think you'd like to support us in some little way, go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile, where you will find a Linktree drop-down box, and our Patreon page and a merch page can be found on that link. But if not, that is absolutely fine, because this content is free for all. So what's been happening since the last episode? Been asked to do something with the All About Art podcast in the middle of April, but I'll tell you more about that. Nearer the time. In the middle of March, I've been asked to record an appeal for Cursor Arts on Radio 4. That's something I'm very much looking forward to. But enough about me, let's focus on today's guest, who is the urban artist, Endless. I first saw his work a couple of years ago when we got chatting on Instagram, maybe just over a year ago, and I did ask him to come on, and because of timings either side, it didn't really work out until a few months ago, but yeah, we're finally here. In this episode, Endless speaks about being able to, well, literally reinvent himself in London after moving from rural Suffolk. And he also speaks of how he came to be working with Gilbert and George for some time after they took an interest in his work, as well as a performance at the Venice Biennale. But that's just the headlines. Come and find out the details from the man himself, Endless.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. And where are you?
Southeast London. I heard your interview with, what's his name, the presenter that does the prison stuff?
Raphael Rowe.
Yeah, that's it.
When I was on his.
Yeah, that was good. I like that.
But yeah, Raph's good, isn't he? And
he just did another one that got released yesterday about the guy who was the biggest drug lord and now he's an artist. I can't remember the guy's name.
Oh, is he a scarce fella?
Yeah, yeah.
Is his name Stephen?
Might be, yeah.
Yeah, he was massive. I can't remember his name.
I'm halfway through it. It's quite interesting. The first half he's just talking about his drug cartel and how he did all that. And it's quite interesting because he doesn't big it up. He's just like, that was a business.
Yeah.
We just ran it as a business back then. There wasn't violence like you see in the films. There wasn't all that stuff. It was just, I'm shipping that to there, give me the money.
It's just a process.
Yeah, a process. And it was illegal, but he was from a poor estate and that was his way out. It's just a story, isn't it? It's interesting.
Yeah, I know, he's a fascinating fella.
Yeah. But then when you get to like the PR and people talking about it, and especially in the art world, they need the story. That's the story that sells the work.
Yeah.
And he kind of struggles with that because his work should sell the work, but people are more interested in that backstory. Yeah, it's important. Like, you can fight your own story because you want to get away from it, but it's always part of what you do.
Yeah.
There's no shame in it. There's no, like, from where you've come from, that's an extreme story.
Less about my backstory. Let's have a little bit about yours.
Yeah.
So today I'm speaking with Endless. And how are you, mate? I know we've been chatting for a little while already.
Yeah, we've already done 2 hours talking. So.
Yeah. I'm well known. Anyone who's been on here, they'll tell you that I'm well
known. I thought we'd done the interview. I thought we'd finished.
And goodbye. Endless. I have several questions I ask every artist or every guest. The first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that didn't know your work?
The easiest way I always find is to say I'm an artist, contemporary street art, graphics. I just throw out words like that. I don't think you can sometimes explain things that are so visual, and it's easier just to show someone.
Yeah,
I think all artists go through this kind of weird stage when you feel in yourself you become an artist, and then someone asks what you do, and then the first time you say you're an artist, you either think that someone's going to slam you down or laugh at you or whatever. But yeah, I always keep it pretty vague because it's visual. So you need to show them the visuals to explain it.
Did you have trouble first saying you was an artist?
Yeah. So when you say it the first time, it can sound arrogant to some people, I guess.
I think the street artist brought that perception back down to earth, didn't they? For people who weren't into art, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's more inclusive. It's everyday life. It's for everyone. And sometimes I'll say I'm an artist, and then people will say immediately, "I don't know anything about art," or I don't know artists or anything." But they see visuals all around them every day.
Yeah.
So you don't need to be in the art world. You just need to be in the world. There's visuals. You're watching TV, magazines, like you said, street art. It's everywhere.
Yeah, I was the same with like classical music. When I was speaking to someone, I said, "Oh, I don't know classical music." And then they went, "Well, what's this one?" Pulled up their phone. And then song after song, I was going, "Oh, yeah, I know that. That's that advert. That's that advert."
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Even through, like you said, classical music, you don't need to know the history of it or study it, but you know what it is.
Yeah. Where was growing up for you?
I grew up in the countryside in Suffolk. Near to where Maggie Hamlin lives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right out there. So there wasn't much going on in terms of art or anything. Just sheep and cows.
Although there is that little bit on the coast there, isn't there?
There's these things going on. But when you're younger, you don't really know what the art world is. You're kind of... I was at school. I was always drawing. I was always painting, doing art. And then I knew that that was something that I was interested in, but didn't know how. So then I went to college, Suffolk College, for 3 years and studied
Where is Suffolk College? Obviously that's Suffolk. But
in Ipswich, yeah. So that's the major town from all of those countryside little towns. Yeah. That's the major kind of, I think it's a town, not a city. So that has the big college in it. And they did a huge art course, and you could just do everything. Photography, fine art, printmaking. And that's kind of where I found out what I wanted to specialize in. And it was kind of the graphics, printmaking, but fine art as well is kind of variable. But then from there, I went on to university, Cambridge School of Art. And that's where I specialized in fine art and printmaking. So, yeah, you kind of find out what you want to do as you go along. It's not like straight away.
What were your inspirations around about that time?
I guess I was seeing a lot of kind of graffiti street art as it was growing up in popularity. But then we were studying history of art. So we were studying every single artist you can think. And we were having lectures. And so it was a mix of these two kind of classical art forms, contemporary art, street art, a bit of everything.
And what was you pulling into your work at the time? And or what was you creating at the time?
I was really like interested in layers and kind of experimenting with different techniques. So I'd do like drawing, then screen print over the top, then digital printing over the top of that. So it was mixing all of these layers, because I thought that's kind of like how life is. It's all layered, and everything you see, you're getting bombarded with visuals like TV, magazine. So I thought it was interesting to layer these and comment on how life is with the layering and different techniques. But also it's an experiment. Like each time I do something, it's an experiment and you learn from it.
So there's that kid growing up in Suffolk. Was there any creativity in the home?
Yeah, my mum was always creative. We were always drawing, doing things. And my dad is more of a technical kind of drawer, really good at illustration, doing fine line drawings. So I was always encouraged to be creative. And then at school, that's where I thought it wasn't creative, because art lessons at school level was, this is right, this is wrong, this is what you have to do. But then as soon as I got to college, it was like, do what you want.
You can,
and everything's right, and we're not going to tell you what to do. And you'd call your teachers by their first name. It's completely different. It was more relaxed. And the teachers became your mentor and your friend. And that's when I knew this is kind of the way I want to go.
Nice. And where did you start going then, once you had that bit of freedom?
When I had the freedom, I was just experimenting with all the techniques, like I said, and doing everything, really. Just finding out where I wanted to go. When you're that young, you shouldn't pinhole yourself to one thing. You should just do everything.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
I still feel like I am doing everything.
And so did uni come along?
So at university, we were more specialised. So I studied printmaking more. We were still doing fine art, philosophy, history of art. But that's where I kind of like pushed my techniques, and you learn more.
And was you using, had Endless come about yet?
No, not the name Endless, no. I think all artists are always experimenting, but then I was just trying everything, and I didn't want to go with one philosophy, with one idea. I was still living. And I think when you're that young, you shouldn't say, I'm this artist, I'm doing this. There's so much to explore in life as well, not just physical art.
And what was you then, sort of 19, 20?
Yeah, a bit older, I think 20, at the end of uni, 22 maybe, yeah. So that's so young, you don't want to push too much.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So when and how did Endless come about?
So then after I'd finished uni, then you just get put out into the real world, and you're like, how, especially doing printmaking with all that equipment, and to make the art you're making at uni would cost too much, and you haven't got all of that.
Yeah.
So I knew I wanted to be in London. I liked the energy of London, and London was where everything was happening. So I moved from Cambridge to London, did kind of odd jobs, but I was always doing art on the side. And to make that layering, the techniques that I learned at uni, I was looking at cutting stencils, which is kind of like the street art technique. And it's the same as screen printing. You do stencils when you start screen printing before you go to digital screen prints. Yeah. So it's just the same thing, but I was doing stuff on Photoshop, cutting stencils. And then it took me, I was doing all sorts of things in London, and then it took me about 9-10 years of living in London before I started becoming Endless and doing stuff on the street. I like the name Endless because I had endless creativity, endless ideas. It was a positive word, nice, simple word. And I wanted to convey
mystery about it as well, isn't it?
Bit of mystery, yeah. And I wanted to convey kind of that positivity, but also it had a philosophy. You can put any word in front of Endless, endless creativity, or like endless politics, endless, you can do anything with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of worked. So yeah, I just started going around kind of East London, pasting up work, doing stencils, And I did it for like four nights a week for about 4 or 5 years before it kind of built up into social media photos. People were taking photos, tagging me, and then galleries kind of came at the end, but that took a long time.
And what year was it when the galleries started taking an interest?
I did my first show as an Endless in 2016, I think, with Graphic Gallery in Portobello Road.
Yeah.
They saw my work on the street and then they just contacted me and we kind of built the show together. And it was like the first Endless show and it was a huge success because I put so much work on the street, enough people knew and they all came to the show. So it kind of like showed this ground PR kind of thing that I was doing really worked because they physically came to the show, which is it's hard to get people to come to things, especially in London.
And if you was looking for anonymity, how was you on your first exhibition?
I always wear a mask. So I wear the mask at the exhibition, like a bandana. And I found that interesting as well, because I wanted to be anti, like the selfie, the face that goes with the art. I wanted to create a different look. I don't want to stand next to my art smiling or have this kind of, I don't want to come across as happy or sad. It's just like a blank, area around my face. So I like that idea. And the fact that no one knows who you are, it gives a bit of mystery. So yeah, when people come, I talk to them all the time, but I just wear the mask. I'm not massively strict, but I try to keep it as the mask and the word Endless. Because it becomes its own brand in a way.
Of course. And are the bandanas you've got, are they your own brand now? Or
no, they're just black ones that I've found. Yeah, I've got like 3 or 4 that have got a lot of sweat on them at the moment.
Yeah, all white around the edges.
Yeah, I have to wash them so often. But when you're breathing through a bandana, especially at an exhibition, you get really hot and it's not that nice.
And have you thought of going anywhere else, or will it always be the bandana?
Yeah, for now, the bandana. I've thought of other ideas, but yeah, I think the bandana it's just easy. It's like you've got it in your pocket and it's there.
Although since COVID, we've all got used to speaking to people with a mask, and
wearing
masks isn't the thing it used to be, is it?
Yeah, we were doing events like not through the serious part of COVID, but towards the bits where we could. And people would come to the event in a mask and then it was like, we're all the same. Yeah. And I've been doing this for ages. But yeah, that was quite funny.
Well, which is the piece that you've created do you think has got the strongest emotional connection, be it with you or others?
I always say the last piece I've made, because that's where I've given my emotion last. But I've got a piece which is the Queen with the tongue out.
Yeah,
I've repeated that loads of times and people really connect with that. And I'm not doing it as like a royalist, or although I am a little bit of a royalist, I'm not doing it to promote that. It's more to do with the way we thought of the Queen. Like, the Queen was everywhere, in our houses, on our money. It was kind of like an era, and now she's gone, it becomes even stronger. So yeah, I think people connect with that because they've grown up with the Queen.
Yeah, somewhere. And we all know that face, but when it's doing something different, like with the eyes shut or blowing the bubble gum, and poking the tongue out.
Yeah, the tongue I got actually from a real photo of the Queen. She did poke her tongue out.
Oh, did she?
So, yeah, there is a photo of her with her tongue out. So I wanted to show that kind of fun side of her that you don't normally see, but it has been captured in real life.
In all the regalia, yeah.
Yeah, kind of serious and fun.
Yeah, you've used that one for quite a while, and you've done it on, as in murals as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done that one quite a while. I've done that one, and then I've got another one that's like a Chanel bottle that's called Chapel.
Yeah.
Which is the idea that we go to the shops, which are cathedrals, and the brands are our kind of new religion. So the chapel is where you'd go to buy your perfume. Done that one, and then I've got another one where it's Mark Wahlberg grabbing his crotch from a Calvin Klein advert. It was like in the 80s or 90s, the Calvin Klein advert. And I kind of remastered that to Calvin Classics, which is kind of a play on the fake Calvin Klein you get on the market stores.
Of course.
Yeah, so they're my three that I've kind of stuck with, and then there's loads of others that other visuals that come along.
And you've done a few, I don't know if you'd call them performance, but you've done a few performance type works as well. I see when I first got in touch with you, maybe, what was that, maybe a year ago? Was that a fashion?
That was in the Venice Biennale when we did the Biennale. So we did the opening event, and we had a sponsor, Elisabetta Franchi. She's a Italian fashion designer, and she stood with her dress. Brilliant. And then I sprayed it live, and everyone was watching. So there's kind of a performance element. I always thought street art is like a performance. If you filmed graffiti or artists or street artists doing their thing, that is a performance in itself.
And how did that go down at the Biennale?
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
That performance went down quite well. I mean, I did some press after it, and they were like, oh, it's very controversial that you did this on. But I didn't find it any controversy in that. But generally, when I do things in Italy, they're really supportive. I think the Italian culture with art is completely different to how we grow up in this country.
Okay.
They grow up learning about art from an early age. They respect it, and they're very positive. I thought when I came over as the Englishman into their country, it looks a bit arrogant when you kind of go, look at all my work. I'm in your country. I want the press. But they were really, really supportive, and they seemed to like what I was doing.
And did you stay out there for any longer than just the Biennale?
Well, we did the show at the Biennale. So that I was the first street artist within the Biennale ever.
Brilliant.
Within one of the palaces. It was for San Marino we did it for.
Nice.
So you do it, each country has like a palace or a show on. So I was one of the first street artists, which was like a fairly big thing. We got a bit of press from that, and I did a huge installation where we made these wooden panels, and I did paste-ups like I do on the street. But it was massive. So that took about 2 weeks to set up out there. And then... that was good. That was really good.
Yeah, having a Venice Biennale on your CV is not a bad thing, is it?
Yeah, it's good. Even if I do it just once, that's a nice thing to do. But also very interesting to see how Venice works when there's so many artists coming in. And I mean, the price of everything goes up, and building structures is absolute craziness.
Well, I'd only been once. My friend Lee took me for my 50th. And I was properly blown away.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I mean, we just done 2 days there. Could have easily done 4 or 5.
Yeah, you can be there for a week and not see it all. So there's loads to see, and it's all so different as well. It's not like an art fair where you go around an art fair and it feels like you're in IKEA of the art world. It's just like stall after stall of similar things. There is everything's different, and you've got Venice as well. Best backdrop ever.
Yeah, don't get much better than that, does it?
No.
If there was you and 5 other artists, past and present, what do you think your ideal group show would be?
I don't know. I've never thought about group shows, really, because I always think when you're an artist, it's so personal that you always want to do your own thing. And like in a group show, it has to be curated in a certain way, but there are artists that I like and that I would do a show with that I think would be completely different. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ez Devlin. She does like this stage design, and it's more kind of installations, projections, and sculptures. And I find her work really interesting.
While you're talking, I'm going to go and have a look. Know it when I see it.
It's ES and then Devlin. But she does literally drawings and paperwork.
I didn't know it. And yeah, they're gorgeous.
Yeah, she does a lot of paperwork. And then she does these huge installations, stage shows. Yeah, stage design, projections and sculptures, really.
I've never heard of her.
No, she's really
amazing.
Yeah. And then I'd think I'd go for kind of like in the fashion world. I don't know if you've heard of Rick Owens. He's this fashion designer, and he's created his own world. It's kind of androgynous. It's sculptural fashion. It's all black. But when he does catwalk shows, he has kind of balls of fire coming across the thing. Wow. Insane. So I like these people that are creating their own worlds.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really enjoy the fact that you could look into that world and see how their whole brain is thinking. And then another one I'd probably go for is Karl Lagerfeld, but not through the fashion. He was a really good photographer. So his photographs, he has some amazing black and white photography that doesn't really get seen because he's known as this fashion designer. So I think that would be strong in a show. And then, of course, Gilbert and George, they're kind of my favourite artists. But
I
not
did see that picture of you standing between them.
Yeah.
With half cropped face. I thought that was great.
In one of their works in 2014, they used some of my street art in one of their works.
Brilliant.
And then we kind of got in touch with each other and we've done things throughout. And they've been kind of mentors to me. But I really like how they live as artists, not just their artwork.
Yeah.
They're like full on, like how they live is their art as well. And again, their artwork layer in and stuff. I think this kind of combination of projections, fashion, layering of art, photography, that's how my mind works. So a show like that, I think, would be the most interesting show. Yeah.
Well, I wrote to them when I was away and they returned. They sent loads and loads of stuff. And on my first or second day out of jail, when I was allowed to go into London to visit galleries, I had their address, popped round, and that was quite an experience to meet them.
Yeah,
I'd sort of like heard a lot about them, read a lot about them. I hadn't seen them because I had no access to computers or anything like that, so I'd seen no moving images of them. But it was a little bit overwhelming, really, to sort of go into their house and sit chatting to them. It felt like I was in a movie of sorts, you know.
Yeah, when you study art and you see these kind of legends of art and then you meet them like that in their house, in their studio, it is very surreal to start with.
It's like I felt like a Mr. Ben character. I'd sort of stepped into the books that I'd been reading.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when you've studied that and you really feel how kind of they feel and you understand them, and then you meet them. They always say don't meet your heroes or don't meet people that you admire because it's never as good, but when you meet them it is as good.
No, that's something that wouldn't happen too often, isn't it?
Yeah, and they're so nice, because when you look at some of their work, it can be a bit out there and you think these guys are crazy, like they're mad people, but when you meet them they're just the nicest normal people.
What would you do if you wasn't an artist?
I'm not sure, like I always think about that, because sometimes you think that it could all come to an end pretty quick as well. But yeah, it would be something creative, maybe in fashion, maybe in design more. There's, you know, the word art is so vast, there's so much that you could do with creativity. So yeah, probably look for a different avenue within that design fashion world.
Would you ever consider creating art as you, the person behind the mask, as it were?
Well, yeah, I do. That's what I do. The mask is just for like PR, whatever. But the work that I make, when I look back, I went back at Christmas to my parents and I was looking at old work that I did when I was 16, 17. And there's so many similarities. Like, I've obviously, hopefully, got a little bit better, but there's so many similarities. That's who I am. That's your identity. You can't, if someone says, oh, go and paint like that, you could, but it's not who you are. So, yeah, that is me. Endless is like the persona, the kind
And
of
that's what
thing
I'm saying.
created.
Could you create work outside of the persona?
Different artwork, you mean? Different
Yeah.
style, different. Yeah, I could, but it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be like my passion or what I was trying to say and how I make it. It's kind of developed naturally. When you start selling work, you're in this kind of like commercial art world. And then you start thinking in a different way. Even if you think you don't think in that way, you're like, oh, what do people like or what does sells? And then you kind of subconsciously, even if you think you're not doing it, you're always thinking of another reason. Like it's not purely the raw way.
And
Yeah, it's
everyone
interesting.
goes, oh, I don't want to be commercial, but everyone's making commercial work, you
Hey,
know.
if you sell one thing, you're a commercial artist.
Exactly, exactly.
And then people, yeah, like to say they're not commercial or I hate commercial work, but it's just words.
And what is it you're doing at the moment, talking of creating artwork?
I'm just working on new work in the studio. And then once I've got a body of work that I'm happy with, then I'll create an exhibition from that. And there's loads of different things in the pipeline that aren't 100%. So, yeah. But at the moment, I'm just focusing on the work. And like sometimes there's too much going on with press things or exhibitions, and then you become the flavor of the month. But then you also need all of that time just to think and make new work.
Yeah.
So you need a team around you that knows you need 6 months, you need even longer just to go into that dark hole and just make the work. Because a lot of people want to be artists, but they don't like, most of the time I'm on my own just making the work, or doing street art sometimes, but it's pretty much in the studio all the time on my own listening to your podcast.
Oh, good man.
I listen to so many podcasts because I used to listen to music when I was making work, but it's good, but I rather listen to people talking and kind of like gain some knowledge while I'm working and
Yeah.
more relaxing.
Well, I found years ago when I was creating artwork and had music on, it used to affect my work.
Yeah.
Like if I was listening to Pink Floyd, for instance, it would have essence of Pink Floyd
Yeah.
in it, even, you know, it'd be a bit more sort of slower artwork. And if I was listening to a bit of garage or something, then
That's
it'd
true,
have a different flavour.
yeah. Yeah, and if you're listening to an interview, you're not as affected. You're just learning, so your
Yeah,
mind is in a different place. It's more
which is
relaxed.
when we was having a conversation before we started, the essence of this podcast was you're just overhearing a conversation that's going on in front of you or next door or
Yeah,
out the window or something, you know.
and that's the most interesting interview sometimes.
Yeah,
More
because I
casual.
remember, yeah, when I was at uni and it was the artists were all together, you know. Excuse me. I'd be painting in the corner. And then you are listening to all these
Yeah.
conversations and you're a part of them, although you're not a part of them, you know, keeps you company.
Yeah, that's true. When you're at uni, it's completely different because it's a group thing. But then when you become an artist in real life, you're on your own. So now you've got your podcast as your group.
So where are you looking doing your next exhibition? Is it sort of lined up at all, or is it
No,
just?
it's not lined up on for this amount of work. I'm trying to do like 20, 30 canvases, maybe even more, and then think how that should look in an exhibition, then find the space and find someone to work with to make that happen,
Got you. Oh,
rather than find the space first.
you bring people in to curate, do you?
I work with my gallery, Chris Contini Contemporary Gallery. They're Italian based, but they before COVID they had a gallery near Bond Street, and we work together on producing shows. So yeah, they curate it. I always think like I basically can curate it. I know what it needs to look like. So they just help me put it together.
Yeah, you give them the outlines and get them to do, put it together.
And we work really well together. And there's so much work that goes into doing a big exhibition that you don't see. You just walk in, but you don't see. Even the wording on the wall takes hours to sort of put on. And hanging takes a few days. Yeah.
How long have you been with them?
For like 4 years, 4 or 5 years now. So yeah, we've done a lot of big good things in Italy and in London before COVID. We were doing exhibitions in London. But in Italy we did Uffizi. We donated a piece there for the first street artist to donate in the Uffizi gallery. And then we did the Biennale, and then we've done 2 museum shows in Italy as well. So yeah, it's going quite good in Italy. I don't even speak Italian.
Have you started?
No, because I go out there 2 weeks, and I kind of get a little bit, and then I go and I forget it all.
Hello and goodbye is all you need, and that's why
I can say some things on menus if I need food, but yeah, that's about it. But I'm a classic British kind of, I know English, so that's universal.
My son went to Bulgaria. My son's got a Bulgarian girlfriend. And he went to visit her family with her. And he's picked up a few little words. And when he came back from Bulgaria, he went, I even ordered my own dessert. I went, what did you have? He said, souffle.
Yeah, you just put a bit of an accent twang on something and you speak the language.
He ordered a French dessert in Bulgaria and thinks he's a sort of a wizard, you know.
Yeah.
Good luck.
If you put the twang on it, it's always the dodgy way of saying stuff. But yeah, you think you know the language.
Well, saying that, I dropped him off to the airport this morning. They've both gone to Paris for the for the weekend.
Yeah, so he'll be saying it all. Yeah.
He'll be ordering souffles till he's till he comes home, won't he?
Yeah.
Where can anyone find you, be it website or social media?
I always post on Instagram, so that's Endless Artist. And that's my main kind of output. Then I've got the website, Endless the Artist, but that doesn't get updated as regularly. So yeah, Instagram's my main output.
I went on there a couple of days ago. Mm. I like your homepage there.
Yeah.
Because it sort of just shuffles, doesn't it? It has a little...
It has a little glitch.
Yeah. And then that happened. I liked that.
Yeah, we tried to make it a bit different, the video.
I think, well, to tell you the truth, I looked at it and I thought, I mean, I haven't got a website. I've got like a landing page sort of thing. But when I saw that little glitch, I thought, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna nick that when I get a website.
Yeah. I think everyone now is basically social media based and people have the website, but everything's social media.
Yeah. But the only thing is that I used to be on Facebook and everything was on there. And I haven't been on Facebook now for months.
Yeah.
And then I moved it all to Instagram.
Yeah.
But then who's to say?
Yeah, you never know.
Another one doesn't come along, you know. So I think the website is
you got it,
safety net for everyone.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you got something strong on the internet.
Yeah. All right, mate. Well, that's every question I asked, mate.
That was quick, yeah.
Thank you very much for your time.
That's right. Hopefully you come to the next exhibition or come and see me in my studio.
I definitely will do. A studio visit I'd like.
Yeah, come along.
I don't do as many of them anymore. Really.
We'll talk about world domination and other things. All right, have a good day. Thanks
for having me, mate. Right. See you later on.
See you, bye. Hello.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. It's a podcast that's produced with the help of the listener. And if you like what you've heard and you think you might be able to give a little support, there's 2 ways in which you can do it. If you go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile, you'll find a Linktree drop-down box. And in that box, you'll find 2 links. One is called Buy Us a Coffee, and it's pretty much that. You can make a one-off payment, the price of a cup of coffee. Or, if you're able and want to do it more long-term, you can become a Ministry of Arts Patreon, where you can sign up to support us on a monthly basis, and 100% of your support goes back into the podcast. And if you're not able to do that, that's absolutely fine. This content is free for everyone.
but we would urge you to follow us on your socials and show us a bit of love that way. Either way, thanks for listening and see you next time. Ta-da.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.